I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
The raise for hundreds of thousands of workers across Ontario. The minimum wage is going up, but so is the cost of living. Will the extra dollars and cents add up for workers and businesses? Good evening. It's a move the government says has been delayed because of the pandemic.
The increase to $15 an hour takes effect in January, and it just so happens a few months later, Ontarians head to the polls. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
But the Premier, Michel, says this is not about politics. It was about the pandemic. He says COVID-19 has increased the cost of living for hundreds of thousands of Ontarians, which is why they needed a raise, he says. But it still takes effect during an election year. Some believe this is nothing more than an election ploy. From the gas station to the grocery store, the cost of living has been squeezing families in Ontario, and paychecks have not kept up. But today, the Ford government announced minimum wage in Ontario will once again increase to $15 an hour.
This change would mean a full-time minimum wage worker could see a raise of $1,350 a year.
The general minimum wage will increase from the current rate of $14.35 an hour, while the minimum wage for liquor servers will increase from $12.55 to $15 an hour. The increase, while no doubt welcomed by workers, comes 3 years after the Ford government canceled it in the first place. In 2018, the premier claimed it was burdening employers, preventing them from creating jobs.
Meanwhile, the cost of everything is going up. Auto insurance is up, hydro's up, gas is up, milk is going up 8%, butter's going up 12%. Everything is going up, but people's wages.
The premier says the one major difference between then and now, COVID-19.
We didn't have the pandemic, a worldwide pandemic. Everyone's been facing a challenge over the last 20 months. Things were a lot different back in 2018.
Good to see you.
What is also different is the premier wasn't facing re-election in 2018. Now, with the 2022 election around the corner, the Ford government has made peace with unions, making announcements more fitting of left-of-center parties.
This is a complete election ploy. We're 8 months away, and I think the premier knows that he has been wrong, and I think that he needs to make amends.
And union leaders, it seems, sense an opportunity.
In order to get to a $22 living wage in Toronto, you're going to have to go through 15. A living wage in London, Ontario is about 16, 20. So do I think $15 is wonderful? The answer is no. But do I think it's a good start? The answer is yes.
So as long as the premier keeps saying yes to pre-election spending, Doug Ford has made friends of his one-time foes. And people who work in bars and restaurants are actually going to be getting the greatest pay increase in January. Anyone who serves alcohol will actually be getting $5,000 more when minimum wage rises for them. The finance minister says the pandemic played a role as well. They normally rely on tips, but those tips dried up during COVID-19. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. So many people already know there can be a big difference between what shows up on a paycheck and what it actually takes to get by.
It's not cheap living in the GTA, making ends meet in a time when parts of the economy remain on edge. CTV's Austin Delaney's live with more. Austin.
Oh, we spoke to a man today who worked in the kitchens for more than 20 years. He's now an owner of a restaurant, knows how hard it is in the back. We also spoke to a bartender who says she'll now have a steady wage to take to the bank.
Michelle Usbridge mixes up a lunchtime cocktail for a customer. She's the bartender at Stout's on Carlton Street and welcomes the liquor server's basic wage raise from $12.55 to $15 an hour.
Huge bump for servers and bartenders.
Who she says, because they rely on fluctuating tips, find it difficult to finance cars and houses.
So to be able to have a base salary, then to go to them, to a bank for a loan, for a mortgage, and then saying, I don't have to prove to you my tips I'm getting. I can prove to you an income on paper that might be a little bit higher, and then they'll be like, okay.
Around the corner on Parliament Street, the kitchen at Johnny G's is hopping. But George Fiorino says the high cost of living is hurting low-wage earners.
$15 is not too bad, but you still, you know, your expenses are going up all the time. Every single day, you know, I go buy a loaf of bread, $3. Crazy. For a loaf of bread, you know, cereal, milk, everything's going up. Yeah. If you're a single person and you got to pay for your rent, your hydro, your insurance, whatever, I don't see how they can manage.
The restaurant is a Cabbage Town staple, and as of today, it has a new owner who has worked kitchens for more than two decades. Now, Vinesh Sharma is the boss, but knows how hard the backroom work is and how little the pay can be.
I don't mind to pay a couple of dollars extra.
And at the Cabbage Town BIA, Virginia Gallup says businesses are going to take another hit.
Naturally, any increased expense to businesses is a hardship of sorts. And our businesses, like all small businesses and big businesses as well, have really struggled during the pandemic.
But she thinks more money in the employees' wallets might bring some stability to the tight labor market.
Because businesses, especially bars and restaurants, are complaining they can't attract people. They say this should help bring people in. Point Live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. And our online team has continuing coverage of this story, including a comparison between Ontario and other provinces. You can find that at ctvnewstoronto.ca. And staying with your money, you'll be spending more of it on certain food items.
We've been seeing price hikes at the grocery store for a while, and now the list of things getting more expensive is even longer. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more on that. Scott.
Michelle, we're talking dairy. We're talking about dairy staples like milk, butter, cheese. Then you have to think about all of the foods that those go into. Talking pizza, ice cream, baked goods. As you mentioned, food prices on the rise this year, and now a warning that's going to continue next year.
From cakes to cookies, Danishes to donuts, there's plenty to choose from at Whitby's Village Bake Shop. In the new year, baked goods like these may cost a little more, thanks to increases in the costs of dairy products.
It goes in every product.
From milk to butter, they are staples in many bakeries and homes too, and their prices are expected to jump after the Canadian Dairy Commission recommended an 8.4% increase in farm gate milk prices.
We are expecting some dairy products to increase in price by 12 to 15% as a result of this decision. For example, with cheese, well, there's a multiplier effect. You need several liters of milk to produce 1 kilo of cheese. So as you can imagine, things can get very expensive in the dairy section of the grocery store.
The increase in prices meant to offset rising production costs due to the pandemic, including feed, energy, and fertilizer costs, costs that will either have to be absorbed or passed on by those who make their living using Canadian dairy products.
It's just we're going to have to do what we do and just try to keep our prices down, but we're going to change the way we buy certain products, but we'll make it work.
Consumers may be looking at bigger bills, not only at the bakery, but also at the grocery store, some thinking about whether to pay more or switch to non-dairy alternatives.
We are butter people in the house. I can't see it changing any. And as far as milk, yeah, you got to drink your milk. I got to have milk in my coffee. So that's the beginning.
And these price changes will only impact Canadian-made dairy products. Price changes will take effect at the beginning of next February. Reporting live in Scarborough, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Scott. And just ahead, how much money do you need to make to own a home in Toronto? The numbers proving just how out of reach that reality is becoming, and the advice for people trying to enter the market. A teen convicted of sexually assaulting another student at an all-boys school has been sentenced to 2 years probation with no time in jail. In June, a judge found the teen guilty of gang sexual assault with a weapon, and assault during a locker room incident at St. Michael's College School in 2018. The incident was captured on video and shared widely on social media. The prosecution had argued the teen should spend 3 months in jail. This sentence is in line with four others who pleaded guilty in connection with the case. The NHL executive, who's been spared his job for his part in the mishandling of sexual assault allegations made by former player Kyle Beach, is speaking out.
Kevin Cheveldayoff is staying on as general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, saying he didn't understand the severity of the allegations. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, at a press conference just an hour ago, Kevin Cheveldayoff said he first believed the allegations made by Kyle Beach were, quote, along the lines of harassment, including inappropriate texts and unwanted advances, but not sexual assault.
I want to begin by stating how sorry I am that this happened to Kyle.
He's the last man standing from an executive group who failed to act after former Chicago Blackhawks player Kyle Beach brought forward allegations of sexual assault in 2010.
Kyle was failed by a system that should have helped him, but did not. I am sorry that my own assumptions about that system were clearly not good enough.
Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, then Blackhawks assistant general manager, was cleared by the NHL last week of any wrongdoing, even though he was in the room along with other executives after the Blackhawks advanced to the Stanley Cup final and heard allegations that then video coach Brad Aldrich sexually assaulted Beach.
He left the meeting believing that this matter was going to be investigated by his bosses. And when Aldrich parted ways with the team, he thought that was what had happened.
The league accepted the resignation of general manager Stan Bowman and then head coach Joel Quenneville earlier this week. But Jets ownership is standing by Cheveldayoff.
He didn't know about the harm that had been done to Kyle. He couldn't have known.
Believing he deserves to keep his job.
Now, earlier today, Kyle Beach's attorney met with the Chicago Blackhawks to discuss a possible settlement to a lawsuit filed earlier this year accusing the team of negligence. The team reportedly wants to pause the lawsuit for 2 months, while Beach's attorney is asking for an offer to be made now. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Another NHL team is being accused of mishandling sexual assault allegations. The wife of former Pittsburgh Penguins minor league assistant coach Jared Skuld alleges she was groped in 2018. Aaron Skuld alleges she was assaulted by John Clark Donatelli, who was head coach of Pittsburgh's AHL affiliate at the time. A lawsuit is expected to be filed, also naming former Penguins assistant manager Bill Guérin and Penguins co-owners Mario Lemieux and Ronald Burkle. None of the allegations have been proven in court.
In just moments, taking advantage of the kindness of strangers, the warning from police about fake taxi drivers taking Good Samaritans for a ride.
So your forecast now, this Tuesday has been on the chilly side, and there's even the potential for flurries tonight. Michelle Jobin is here. What are you seeing?
Well, we've actually already seen, Michelle, in some parts of southern Ontario and around the GTA, some wintry precipitation. Everything from accumulating snow overnight in Grey County to grapple, which I'll go into a little bit more. It looks like ice pellets, but it's slightly different. And then, of course, there's the potential right in the city of Toronto for a mix of precipitation or wet flurries tonight. We've already seen some of that activity in St. Markham or Whitby. And this is how things look on radar and satellite imagery. Looking at this blue and pink showing up on the radar, Kitchener area has seen quite a lot of this activity. And yes, as Michelle mentioned, a little on the cool side, we did actually briefly reach 9 degrees at Pearson Airport, but we've been trending below seasonal and certainly will be overnight. Winds out of the west driving precipitation off of the upper Great Lakes. It's been a mix of things, of course, showers, wet flurries, and even some snowfall. 4 degrees in Brampton and Oshawa right now. As we look at the city of Toronto, we are currently sitting at 6 degrees at the islands, 4 at Pearson, going down to a low of 0. I'll tell you more about your forecast coming up soon. Nathan?
All right, thanks, Michelle. It's an incident raising the alarm among dog owners in one Toronto neighborhood.
Something that's normally a convenience is now the focus of a police investigation. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Normally the bowl would go right here.
Spirit Leaf Cannabis on Queen East usually keeps a dog water bowl on its front step.
Well, it's a very dog-friendly neighborhood, and we also have treats inside for the dogs.
But over the weekend, this happened.
There was a man walking eastbound on Queen Street, and he stopped, came back, and sprayed something into our dog water bowl.
You can see a man in a black and white hooded coat and wearing neon green and pink bags walk by the dispensary and point to the water bowl. 10 seconds later, he returns carrying something in his hands. You can see him unwrap the object, and then he appears to spritz a substance into the water bowl. It's unclear what that substance is, but the video is raising concerns among dog owners in the neighborhood.
It's really disgusting behavior. It really is. I can't believe that somebody would stoop that low to harm our dog community.
It's obviously trying to be hurtful to the dogs, and we love our dogs, especially in this community. Most of the businesses are really dog-friendly. So.
Animals don't do anything except want to be loved. And for somebody to do that, it just means that they're, you know, very insensitive, uncaring.
Soon afterward, you can see a woman walking past the store steer her dog away from the bowl after a witness warns her about what he saw. The witness then alerted store staff.
Catafalma says the water in the bowl was never actually analyzed, so we don't know what, if anything, the water was laced with. Staff inside the store apparently dumped the bowl out immediately after they were told the water had been tampered with.
Employees then called police, who are now investigating.
Very upset and angry, and I hope that something like this doesn't happen again.
Catafalmo says he hopes police find the man who did this, but in the meantime, the store is not putting out a dog bowl. Janice Golding, CTV News.
The search is still on tonight for the driver of a car involved in a pair of shootings, including one that targeted a police station. This is video of the vehicle. Shots were fired at the 55 Division substation near O'Connor and Eglinton just after 8 last night, make that last Friday. Investigators say the suspect opened fire after scattering sharp objects at the entrance of the parking lot. No one was hurt. About an hour later, a home near Gilbert Avenue in Eglinton was hit by bullets. Investigators say the same car was spotted driving away from both scenes.
They appear to be fighting. In fact, they're working together. Their goal, to scam unsuspecting people.
That's the basis of a renewed warning from police involving fraudulent taxis. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, the question is, what would you do in that situation? The two people who are fighting appear to be a taxi driver and somebody who just got out. The person who got out is offering cash. The taxi driver says he doesn't take cash. Would you step in and offer to pay with your debit card? That's what these people are hoping would happen. And police say anyone who does could pay a big price.
Would you hand over your debit card to help solve a problem for a stranger? It's something that Toronto police say happens, and the cardholder ends up losing money.
So this preys on our good nature.
Police are issuing a warning about a scam involving a fake taxi or rideshare driver and a fake passenger. The two appear to be having a heated argument over payment. The passenger saying they can only pay with cash. The driver is saying he won't accept it because of COVID.
They're relying on someone, some good Samaritan, to come along that wants to solve the problem.
The hope is that the Good Samaritan will offer to pay using their debit card in exchange for the cash. And then once that card is handed over, a switch is made.
When you leave with a fake card, they're taking your real card and emptying your account.
Last March, we told you about a number of similar cases, like Susan Palmer, who didn't notice the fake card until it was too late.
Within 20 minutes, they had taken $1,000 cash from the ATM.
$5,000, a little less than $5,000.
Amina Sheikh was given a fake receipt to go along with her fake card. Halton police issued a similar warning last month, and last year, Peel police broke up a fraudulent taxi operation they say netted more than $2 million. And they want the public to be aware, when handing over your card, be sure who you're handing it to.
Police say they don't want to thwart anyone's good nature, but they do want people to be aware. When you see this setup, if you see two people arguing in this nature, it could all be a scam. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. I'll send it back inside.
Thank you, Sean. Turning to the pandemic, Pearson is already accepting international flights, and soon a number of other Canadian airports will do the same.
This move will help ensure travelers are able to access more regional airports for their international travels this winter, while continuing to support our government's measured approach to reopening our borders.
Starting November 30th, flights from abroad will be allowed at 8 additional airports. There are currently 10. The new locations include John C. Monroe, Hamilton International, the region of Waterloo International. And the federal government says higher vaccination levels are allowing it to reopen the airports to foreign flights after an 8-month ban.
When it comes to COVID-19, Public Health Ontario is reporting 331 new cases in its most recent update. 195 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 20,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.5%.
383 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 588,000 over the course of the pandemic. Seven additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,881 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 44 new cases in York Region, with 42 in the city of Toronto. Peel Region has 36 new cases, with 21 in Hamilton and 19 in Halton. There are 13 new cases in Niagara, with two in Durham.
When it comes to COVID-19 vaccines across the province, more than 88.2% of eligible people have received at least one dose, and more than 84.6% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11 million people in Ontario.
Ontario is releasing death records of about 1,800 Indigenous children. They'll go to the National Centre for Truth and Reconciliation. Service Ontario has records of deaths that occurred over the past 70 years. Releasing death records was recommended in the 2015 report from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It documented abuse suffered by Indigenous children at residential schools. The commission says there are 426 known deaths of children who attended the schools in Ontario. An unknown number of children are still missing.
Justin Trudeau issued a challenge to the international community on his final day at the UN Climate Summit.
The Prime Minister urged other nations to follow Canada's lead on carbon pricing. CTV's Glenn McGregor reports from Glasgow.
Justin Trudeau hoped to play a leadership role at COP26 as other countries look for climate change solutions.
Canada is showing that we are doing things. We're making big decisions at home and encouraging people around the world to do more as well.
With a goal of holding the Earth's temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius, Trudeau today urged other leaders to follow the Canadian model by pricing carbon, as his government did in its first mandate.
Putting a price on pollution is the most efficient and powerful way to keep 1.5 alive. That's the call collectively we're making today.
The idea has support from global heavyweights like the International Monetary Fund and the European Commission. But so far, Canada is one of fewer than 70 countries with carbon taxes or cap and trade systems. There was no firm commitment from COP26 for a global carbon pricing scheme. But the environment minister says it's starting to catch.
There's a lot of work to be done, but maybe Glasgow is the moment where we start to have that conversation and we build over time the system.
Leaders leave with no Paris Accord-sized agreements, but still celebrate some new steps, pledging to limit emissions of methane gas and reversing deforestation, two causes of the changing climate.
I would encourage every country that has benefited from pumping CO2 into the air over the last, whatever it is, 250 years, to join this campaign and to help.
Justin Trudeau returns to Ottawa tomorrow to begin acting on some of the climate change commitments he made here. But negotiators are staying in Scotland for another 2 weeks, trying to get countries to agree on more action. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Glasgow.
A major ruling will come down on Friday in the fight for control of Rogers Communications.
A BC Supreme Court judge is going to rule on the legitimacy of a new board of directors handpicked by the company's ousted chairman. Edward Rogers filed a petition asking the court to validate his board. Rogers insists he was entitled under corporate law in BC to remove and replace five directors without a shareholders meeting. His mother and sisters disagree. They say that is a simplistic interpretation of the rules and shareholders should have been involved. The judge's decision is expected around 5 p.m. our time on Friday. And BNN Bloomberg's Paul Bagnell joins us now from Vancouver, where the court proceedings are taking place. Paul, will Friday be the big turning point in this battle?
It certainly should be. It will be a turning point and a decisive one at that, Michelle. The justice involved, Justice Shelley Fitzpatrick, will either rule that Edward Rogers was on solid legal ground, acting within the law when he abruptly revamped the board of directors, or he was not. And while the decision can be appealed, as many court decisions can be, it will certainly be a major, major victory for whichever side she rules in favor of.
In the meantime, with Rogers, specifically, what has all of this public negative attention done for the company and shareholders?
It has sent the share price down since the day that Edward Rogers, it was October 22nd, since the day he announced abruptly that he had replaced five directors on the board of directors. The share price has traded down. It's bounced up a little since then, but it's certainly down. It's trading well below on a valuation basis its two competitors, TELUS and BCE, and it's created a significant amount of confusion about the big corporate transaction that lies ahead for Rogers. That's the proposed takeover of Shaw Communications. Shaw shares are also down, partly because of this confusion.
What else came out today?
Nothing today. The court proceeding took place yesterday, so we're waiting now for the ruling on Friday. Yesterday's hearing was focused really on this one article of incorporation at Rogers. That article contained both the words resolution and the word meeting, so both sides had something to grab onto and claim that their side was correct. Edward Rogers' side said that when he passed what is called a consent resolution to change and replace the board, he was on solid legal ground. The other side, represented by Rogers Communications, the company, and that is the side on which Edward Rogers' siblings and mother are positioned, his sisters and mother, that side argues that a public meeting is absolutely necessary before you can make these kind of changes. Late yesterday, the justice said she will issue her decision, as you've told viewers, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. Whether she issues reasons to go with that decision is not clear yet. We may get a decision, simply a decision, or a decision with reasons.
Man in Bloomberg's Paul Bagnell, live for us in Vancouver tonight as we await the ruling. Thank you. Well, owning a house in Toronto is a dream that continues to feel further and further out of reach for more and more people.
With the average price now above $1 million, many are sitting on the sidelines wondering if the dream of ever owning a home will become a reality. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
She's far from alone in Toronto. 32-year-old Zoe Kiefer is expecting her first child, and the desire to own a home one day is real.
It's just so that you can fit your family and to enjoy life, and so that just feels very unattainable.
Kiefer and her husband make over $100,000 a year, and still owning a house is out of reach.
It's been so many years of paying really exorbitant rent prices. Our disposable income is not enough to sort of generate like a down payment, and our parents aren't in a position to give us a gift.
CTV's chief financial commentator Patty Lovett-Reed says in reality people need about $200,000 of income per year to buy a $1 million house. What about a single person with an income of, say, $75,000 a year? Could they buy a home?
I don't see it happening. I really don't.
Part of the problem, September's average prices. A detached home sits at about $1.7 million, $1.3 for a semi, a townhouse over $900,000, a condo almost $750,000. CIBC found 30% of first-time homebuyers are getting financial help from parents. But Lovett-Reed says even that may not be enough to own a house or condo.
Even if you get help with a down payment, there's going to be so much more to it. You've got mortgage payments, you've got taxes, you've got insurance. A home can be a money pit.
It's creating a feeling among many working singles if they'll ever be able to buy. Mark Jenke is in his mid-30s, renting for the past 9 years.
It's upsetting. It makes the future a bit daunting as well. I love living in the city, and I might not compromise on that for some time.
Stephanie Douglas is a mom of four.
I can't do it for them. Hopefully they can do it for themselves.
Outside Toronto, Stephen Gill in Oshawa is also struggling.
But yeah, I'm making over the 75 grand mark that you were asking about. And then I'm just having trouble getting a down payment for a house is basically kind of where I'm stuck.
Lovett-Reed says it's okay to rent. Take the time to figure out what you can and can't live without. Hopefully prices will go down. And don't give up the dream. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
And multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has more coverage on our website. You can find that at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Still ahead, the medical innovation speeding up cancer diagnosis and improving accuracy. Pathology goes digital in the GTA and why the timing is pivotal.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, at the height of the pandemic when people were locked down and self-isolating, there was an increase in online gambling. Now a credit counseling agency is saying it's noticing more clients with money problems related to betting online. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
below seasonal as we head through the overnight in the city of Toronto. We're expecting a low of zero. And when you factor in the wind chill, because we've had these gustier winds out of the west shifting to the northwest, it's going to feel like -3 early in the morning. Now, winds are subsiding a little bit, but they're definitely helping to drive lake effect. Now, we've seen accumulating snow in some communities to the northwest, and that's going to continue. This is a look at what we could see in the next 24 hours. So another 4 centimeters in areas like Kincardine or Goderich, 3 in Owen Sound, and then we'll get a bit of a shift into Muskoka in the next little while. Wet flurries possible in the city of Toronto. We'll talk more about that in your full forecast. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Gambling's a billion-dollar industry, and when casinos were closed due to the pandemic, many people went online to bet.
Casinos have now reopened, but there is a concern that online gambling, for some, could lead to financial issues. Pat Foran has more on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. It's easier than ever to play poker, blackjack, or slot machines online right at home 24 hours a day. Credit counselors say they've noticed that some clients who are deep in debt feel online gambling is part of the problem.
Many people self-isolated for months at home during the pandemic, and it appears some chose to gamble online. Credit Canada says online betting has always been an issue, but it appears to have gotten worse during the pandemic.
The ease with which people can gamble online has made it a lot more problematic for people.
Some warning signs of a problem include frequently borrowing money, difficulty paying monthly bills, taking cash advances from credit cards, and hiding gambling activity from your partner.
For so many of the clients that we talk to, they are keeping it from those that they love, and then suddenly they can't manage the debt anymore, and they have to have excruciatingly difficult conversations with friends and family.
As casinos reopen, the long-term impact of gambling online is not yet known, but addiction experts say the ease at which it can be done is problematic for older and younger people, too.
Connects has been around for 30 years, and it started off dealing with problem gambling.
Connects Ontario is a provincially funded agency that provides information for anyone dealing with gambling, drugs, alcohol, or mental health issues.
We're free and confidential service. Our live agents are available 24/7, 365.
CTV News reached out to OLG, and a spokesperson told us, OLG is a leader in promoting responsible gambling, featuring player tools and educational materials from our globally recognized PlaySmart program. Ontario's rate of problem gamblers is 0.3%, among the lowest in the country. OLG says it has resources on its website for gamblers who may need help.
And OLG says it's currently the only legal online casino in Ontario, but other companies will be joining as competitors in the new year. If you want to check the resources mentioned in the story, they will be at ctvnewstoronto.ca. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
All right, if you're heading out tonight, might be time to put on that heavier winter coat.
You need that. I think it depends on how well you handle the cold, but I need a hat and a mitts right now. This morning it was freezing, Michelle.
Oh, I am absolutely with you on that. It is definitely time. We are now talking about precipitation of the wintry kind, below seasonal temperatures. Now, there's a bit of a bright spot on the other side of this week if you're looking for a little more warmth, but we'll get to that in the 7 day. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So, yes, we've already seen accumulating snow in some communities to the northwest of the city of Toronto, for example, in the Grey Highlands. And this is going to continue through the evening and into tomorrow as well. We are sitting at 4 degrees in the city of Toronto after briefly reaching a high of 9. But of course, yet again today, we had those gusty winds out of the northwest. Well, they've gone from southwest to out of the west, now shifting out of the northwest. And that's helped to amplify things feeling a little bit cooler. This is how we're doing through the overnight period. And you'll notice that the lows are on the chilly side. Zero degrees in the city of Toronto, -5 for Peterborough, -8 for Bancroft, 0 in London, 0 in Owen Sound. So it's no surprise that if we have precipitation with these temperatures, it's going to fall as something that's a little more on the frozen side. So what we're looking at tomorrow is, again, temperatures that are all a little bit cool. Guelph, 4 degrees 8 degrees in St. Thomas, Welland at 7. And there's a chance again of seeing some showers as we get into the afternoon, especially in Niagara. Collingwood entirely possible that you'll see some snow tomorrow at 4 degrees, Aurora at 6. And then as we look a bit east of the city, that trend continues, especially in Uxbridge at 5 degrees, seeing that rain-snow mix possible for you at times during the day. So looking at our radar and satellite imagery, looking for this blue and pink, that's where we're seeing some snowfall. It's accumulating in the gray highlands, possibly for northern Huron County, very likely as we get through the evening, and shifting into the Muskoka region. We've also seen a fair bit of grapple throughout the region. Grapple is when super cooled raindrops attach themselves to snowflakes. Some people call it corn snow. It's not quite ice pellets. It's not hail, but it's definitely out there today. A lot of people have been reporting that. I've heard of reports of that in areas east of the city and also to the west, so don't be surprised if you see that. Bit of a trough in place surface-wise, and that's keeping us a little bit cool, or a little unsettled, I should say, and an upper-level trough is keeping us on the cooler side in Ontario. So as we get through the next little while, there's that accumulating snow very likely extending right down, in some cases, as far down as, I would say, Port Stanley or Long Point off of Lake Huron. Toronto, we get those spotty showers tomorrow as well, but again, watch out for those flakes through the overnight. It's going to slick up the roads as well, and that's something you need to think of as we hit these overnight lows that are quite cool. Minus 2 tomorrow night after 8 degrees. 0 will be our low Thursday into Friday, but 5 degrees will be our high on Thursday. So quite cool. Warmer next week. Stay with us. Of course, we have lots more to talk about in terms of your forecast and, of course, the day's news coming up after the break.
Mackenzie Health is adopting a new system of imaging for pathology.
And as our health reporter Pauline Chan explains, it's making diagnosis of illnesses like cancer faster and more accurate.
It's an area of hospital work that we don't often see. Pathology is the study of tissues, like from a biopsy, for a diagnosis.
It's processed into microscope slides, glass slides, which for well over 100 years have been examined by a pathologist, someone like me, under a microscope.
But Mackenzie Health is among the first hospitals in Canada to adopt digital pathology, led by Dr. Andrew Evans.
Microscope slides are placed in a device known as a whole slide imaging scanner, and this creates very high resolution virtual slides or digital replicas of the glass slide.
Probably the biggest advantage would be the ability to share these digital images with pathologists in other locations.
Consultations with other pathologists is a common practice, especially in cancer diagnoses, but it was very time-consuming in the past.
The slide could get damaged or lost during transport.
The virtual slides can be shared instantly around the world, and they can be shown to the surgeon and other medical staff, even the patient, which would have never happened in the past. In addition, software using artificial intelligence can enhance the doctor's analysis. And during the pandemic, the digital system allowed pathologists to work even from home. Dr. Evans' work was recently honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the College of American Pathologists.
You know, for us, we really do feel that the caliber of our diagnosis has improved dramatically. He's really transformed digital pathology here at Mackenzie Health. I think he will start to transform it in the whole province. You know, we are the first to actually do it in the province of Ontario.
Now, Dr. Evans' hope is that other hospitals embrace digital pathology as soon as possible. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
The Montreal Canadiens are expecting Carey Price to return soon. It's believed the All-Star goaltender will exit the NHLPA's Player Assistance Program on Saturday. The 34-year-old netminder entered the program October 7th. It offers support for players and their families dealing with mental health, substance abuse, and other issues.
Canada's most successful musical of all time is returning to the Toronto stage.
September 11th, 2001.
Over 200 planes getting diverted.
With thousands of passengers arriving at any minute.
After 643 days, Come From Away returns to the Royal Alexandra Theatre on December 15th. Tickets will go on sale November 10th. The show, along with other productions, halted on March 13th of 2020 when Ontario started locking down. The theatre is able to operate at full capacity, proof of vaccination is required, and masks are mandatory.
Cardi B's won 5 American Music Awards and performed on the show, so this makes sense. She's going to host. Producers say they're excited to have the rapper bring her infectious energy to the fan-voted award show. It'll happen November 21st in Los Angeles. Cardi B took to the stage at the AMAs in 2018. She's also the first female rapper to win Favorite Hip Hop Song twice.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Need a break? We've got you covered with a full night of great shows. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
This change would mean a full-time minimum wage worker could see a raise of $1,350 a year.
Updating our top stories, the province is raising Ontario's minimum wage to $15 per hour starting next year. The announcement comes 3 years after the Ford government scrapped a previous plan to boost workers' wages.
We are expecting some dairy products to increase in price by 12 to 15%.
Prices for baked goods are set to rise as the Canadian Dairy Commission has recommended an 8.4% increase in farm gate milk prices. The jump is aimed at offsetting rising production costs linked to the pandemic.
To some breaking news next, the stabbing near a school in Scarborough. CTV's Mike Walker's live near Kingston Road in Midland. Mike, what do we know?
Well, Nathan, this happened just before 4 this afternoon at a school on East Haven Drive. That's in the Midland and Kingston Road area. Toronto police tell us that a 12-year-old girl was stabbed in the arm. She has been taken to hospital to be treated for minor injuries and I'm told is expected to recover from this. Now, it's not exactly clear where on school property this happened, whether it was inside the school or outside in the yard or the playground, but Toronto police do tell us that they have arrested a 13-year-old girl. No word on any charges at this point and what she could be facing. Again, a 12-year-old girl stabbed at a school here on East Haven Drive in Scarborough. This happened just after school was dismissed this afternoon. She has been taken to the hospital to be treated for minor injuries, expected to recover, and a 13-year-old girl has been arrested. Reporting live in Scarborough, Mike Walker, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, CTVNewsToronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 23 basis points to close at 80.62 U.S. American benchmark oil slid 14 cents a barrel to close at 83.91. And the TSX Composite Index lost 77 points to close at 21,170.
Bombardier says it's on track for completing a new $400 million facility at Pearson Airport by 2023.
This brand new, state-of-the-art, 1 million square foot facility is the ideal place for Bombardier to continue to be a key driver in the local aerospace economy.
The business jet manufacturer will build its global 7,500 aircraft in the 93,000 square meter building. Unifor says the 2,000 Bombardier employees working at Downs View right now will be moving to the Pearson plant. The company insists the new facility will also reduce its energy consumption by 60%.
Another change is coming to Facebook. It is shutting down its facial recognition system. The social media platform will also delete the face prints of more than 1 billion people. There are growing concerns that technology could compromise privacy and may be misused by governments, police, and others. But Facebook says it's hitting the pause button while regulators continue to work on a set of rules governing its use.
Ontario's move to increase the minimum wage is creating plenty of conversation.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Beatrice Vaisman. Reshmi, you'll be getting reaction from small business owners in a variety of sectors.
Yes, Michelle, some familiar faces on CP24 tonight are going to join us again for a panel discussion. Bar owners, barber shops, and the estheticians in Ontario who faced the longest lockdowns in this country during the pandemic. They're going to talk about what it's like to jump back in and now face this $15 an hour minimum wage hike in the new year. We'll have that conversation coming up on CP24 tonight.
And Beatrice, south of the border, advisors at the CDC are recommending the COVID-19 vaccine for children ages 5 to 11.
That's right, Nathan. All that's left is for the CDC director to put pen to paper and officially sign off on it. And then millions of children across the U.S. can start getting the vaccine. The problem is, it's such a big difference state to state when it comes to vaccination rates. West Virginia, the state with the lowest vaccination rates, just 41% of that state's population have had both doses of vaccine. So will inoculating children even make a difference? We'll ask our expert of panels to weigh in.
We look forward to it. Thank you both. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
After the break, a big milestone in the construction of the Eglinton Crosstown LRT. The sweet moment for workers that's been a long time coming.
Tonight, more Canadian airports will be making room for international flights.
It gives a lot more confidence to those booking.
The expanded flight plan and what you need to know for the hectic holiday travel season. Later on CTV National News.
And a reminder, the CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the newscast live on News Talk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app.
A big transit project in Toronto has reached a significant milestone.
This is what the Eglinton Crosstown LRT looks like from above. On the ground, the last section of track has been laid down. Crews installing the last piece of track for the 19-kilometer rapid transit line yesterday. They fastened the last clip, one that was painted gold, to commemorate the occasion at Yonge and Eglinton. The next step is to move light rail vehicles across the entire line with the installation of train signals and communication systems, continuing in 2022.
Let's get you caught up on the weather because, yeah, there's a lot going on tonight.
There is quite a bit going on. In terms of wintry precipitation, we're looking in the GTA of the possibility of showers overnight or a rain-snow mix or the possibility of just wet flurries, of course, accumulating snow off to the northwest of us, in particular adjacent to the upper Great Lakes. Oh, 0 degrees overnight, I would say, and -3 is what it'll feel like in the morning with the wind chill. Tomorrow, 8 degrees, once again a chance of showers in the afternoon, and then -2 overnight. Will be colder as we get through the overnight, and then just 5 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud for Thursday. Friday, 7 degrees and sunny. Better for the weekend, sunshine, 9 and 10 degrees for Saturday and Sunday, and then a little bit of a warm-up into the double digits as we kick off next week. Back to you.
All right, thank you, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Altman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.